flailing as the outpouring of energy pinned him against the wall. The brickwork blackened and cracked around him, a halo of incendiary energy that left an inverse silhouette, as if he had been shot by a heavy flamer. Vanderson heard running footsteps, the sound somehow clear as day over the horror that eclipsed his mind. It was the bearded guard, disbelief slowing his pace as he witnessed the supernatural spectacle before him. Vanderson bit down hard on the energy pouring from his mouth. The strange emanation beaming out of his craw ceased for a blissful moment. Smirker slid to the flagstones, wisps of white smoke curling from his mouth and nostrils. The other guard turned to Vanderson with an expression of pure hatred, spear tip pointed straight at his chest. The floating skull turned in the air to stare right at Vanderson once more. His mind filled with flickering images of bloody carnage. He opened his mouth to scream. As the guard stepped forwards with his spear levelled at Vanderson's chest, another beam of light shot out, catching him in the neck. The big man convulsed as the cascading beam travelled up over his chin and into his mouth, forcing its way in like a snake burrowing into a prey beast's tunnel. He dropped the last spear to the flagstones with a clatter and fell limp onto the recumbent comatose form of his guardmate. Vanderson gave an involuntary sob of fear and confusion. It became a rueful laugh, then a gabble of unintelligible syllables. Then, as Smirker and his bearded comrade clambered clumsily to their feet and stood vacant-eyed before him, his laugh turned into a horrible cackle that sounded as if it came from no living thing. Fenris the Brave stumbled through the woods, the skull around his neck bouncing madly as he stooped under this tree and that. Forced to run almost bent double by his impossible height, he had scratches all over his arms and legs, some quite deep, and his throat was sore from crying. He ploughed on regardless, driven by some nameless desire to share, to propagate his gift. Fenris felt his vision begin to clear. He slowed, then stopped altogether, staring in horrified amazement at his elongated, over-muscled limbs. Sobs rose in his chest, great racking spasms of terror and panic. "Fear not," said the voice in his head, the voice he could swear was coming from the varnished skull around his neck. "The glory that you hold within you is more beautiful than the sunset. You serve a divine purpose. March on." Fenris nodded, choking down his anguish and making off again. There, on the horizon, he could see his quarry. A set of low walls, the remains of an ancient hill fort. Fires sent lazy trails of smoke into the evening air, and faint strains of viol music reached down to him, piercing the fog in his head. He recognized the tune. The Dancing Duke, it was called. It had been one of his favorites before.
"You are the bringer of truth," said the skull around his neck. "This night they will dance to a different melody."
Fenris nodded, his grin exposing far too many teeth, and resumed his loping, ungainly run. The vassal guard known as Jethred Gorn got unsteadily to his feet. For once, his habitual smirk was entirely absent. He was still in the corridor outside the holding cell, but his throat and chest were aching, as if he had choked on a lungful of dank fire smoke. Jethred had been looking forward to spending some quality time with the captive Vanderson. Once that bearded Ove Trenton was off his attendance cycle, Jethred was going to practice a little with his knife, telling the high vassal the wounds he inflicted were in self-defense. Such little indulgences helped him forget what happened at the Five Challenges last year, if only for a while. Instead, though, Jethred had been caught off guard when the door flew open, his spear up as some kind of servo skull distracted him. The prisoner, Vanderson, had taken his shot. He had felt something hit him, pushing inside him before disappearing entirely, without leaving so much as a bruise behind. The prisoner, too, was gone, his tiny cell empty of everything, save a scrap of sackcloth. There was no sign of Trenton. Jethred felt a rising need to flee, or at least to move away from that horrible cell, and find somewhere bright, somewhere with lots of people. The kitchens were a good place to start. The vassal guard felt something burn in his chest as he set off. It felt like a very weak acid, but covering his skin as well as his insides, and it itched like fury. Each time he scratched it, it got worse. He could feel it moving up his throat, slowly but surely. He heard heavy footsteps, the thunderous thumpings of a space marine. He turned the corner to be confronted by a looming wall of white ceramite, one of the absolvers accompanied by three vassals.
What happened?
Asked the Space Marine, his Voxcast voice intense and angry. The auto-seraphs are reporting a prisoner breach. Jethred was about to reply when a great torrent of burning white ectoplasm shot from his mouth, spraying the Adeptus Astartes and splashing onto the vassals nearby. The Space Marine fell back, clutching his helm. His attendants screamed, clawing at their clothes as the fabric clung to the molten flesh beneath. All three of them began to shudder, strange growths jutting from their skin. Jethred drew his knife and stuck it right in the neck joint of the Space Marine's armor, aiming for his jugular. The blade snapped. Then the Absolver backhanded him in the gut, sending him sprawling down the corridor. Jethred rolled in a tangle of limbs. His stomach had ripped open inside him under the force of the blow. He could feel it as a queasy knot of horror and pain. It was so painful, he could not help but let that feeling out. His vision became a blinding white blur, the agonizing light in his head turning his world inside out. When he recovered his wits, the walls were streaked with glowing red-black lines, molten stone dribbling from their undersides. In the corridor before him, the Absolver had been cut into three smoldering chunks. One of the vassals was neatly bisected from shoulder to hip, his remains steaming gently in the corridor. The other two were staggering away, one clutching his stomach, the other grabbing at his head, as if to keep it from splitting open. Glowing white ectoplasm dribbled from his mouth.
A good start, young dolt, said a voice inside Jethred's head. But we still have work to do.
Chapter 9. Hope Yet. Ferrogiant Thetoid, Saltire Vex, Pelagic Industrial World, Chalnath Expanse. Rigswoman Delagio picked her nose absently as she stared through the monitor room's window. An Arvus lighter was coming through the rain, its stab lights illuminating Thetoid's sky shield pad. She checked her manifest data slate for the incoming craft's credentials. No scheduled visit.
What did I say, Markins? She said over her shoulder to her colleague. No idents.
As was invariably the case when anything unusual needed doing, the big man was asleep at his station.
Markins, you useless lump of sump sludge!
Huh?
The sound of old recaf tins scattering around heralded Markins' return to wakefulness.
We have company! The unscheduled kind! Might be bringing word about when we're getting off-world. I'm heading out to check it.
In this weather?
Said Markins, shaking his head.
Want me to come with you?
No, I've got it. No sense both of us getting the cold ague.
Delagio pulled her blankets around her shoulders like a cloak, then pulled a tarpaulin coverall over her head and struggled it down over the whole lot. She felt more like an ambulatory cone than a woman, her gloved hands poking out less than a foot on either side, but at least she would keep relatively warm. As she neared the door, Delagio grabbed her pulse pistol from the desk, secreting it under her blankets and tucking its handle into her belt. She had been dying to fire the bulky sidearm in earnest since the first shipment of weapons came in from the Tau. If needed, it would burn through the blankets just fine to give any hostiles a nasty surprise. Perhaps today was the day. Fighting open the door against the howling, cutting wind, Delagio stepped out into the cold of the gantry and gripped the icy rail hard as she descended towards the sky shield. Ahead, the Arvus lighter had already landed, no mean feat of piloting in the howling gale. It was powering down. Delagio brought one hand inside her blanket cloak and up to the handle of the pulse pistol, thumbing the slide so it powered up and became warm to the touch.
Come on, take her, said Delagio softly. Make your move.
The lighter's rear hatch sprung up with a jerk of motion, coming to a halt before a well-muscled brown arm pushed it all the way open. Stepping out of the passenger bay was a tall, well-built woman with an expression like a storm about to break. Her dreadlock hair was pulled back in a tight sheaf, and she had a bloody bandage wrapped around her neck as an impromptu scarf.
Throne above!
Shouted Delagio, recognizing the woman from last year's promotions briefing.
Your deal, right? Yes. Can we get inside?
Delagio beckoned her over. Together, the Rigswomen climbed back into the octagonal viewing room, Deal pulling the door closed behind her and resealing it with a clunk of the wheel lock.
Delagio waved Markins down. The big man sat back in his prized recliner and laid down the heavy iron rod he kept in case the takers came for him.
The weak blue light of the cage lumens lit the three of them as Delagio and Deal slumped into the nearest seats.
Damnation! But it's good to see a fresh human face, said Delagio.
Markins, this is Riggs woman Jensa Deal. Big name from Omicroid. According to the gossip traders, she literally breathes fire. Well, I haven't done that in years, said Deal, with a tired smile. Though I can still remember the taste of promethium just fine. Delagio laughed. I bet. She took a bell jar of moonshine from under her desk and held it out. I'm Kaita Delagio, chief rigswoman of this fine imperial edifice. Thanks, said Deal, reaching out a shaking hand. She swigged from the jar before making a grimace.
Throne, that's bad.
Better than your piss-weak Omicroid muck, said Delagio.
Picked a nice night for it,
said Markins, throwing Deal a ragged blanket. She wrapped herself in it with a grateful nod.
No wonder you look beaten. Hey, Agro, didn't you say Omicroid went up in flames?
It did, said Deal, before Delagio could reply. She gulped uncomfortably as the moonshine burned its way down. I just flew over its smoking remains.
Empress Fist, said Markins. A lot of good souls there.
The scuttlebutt from Gamek said you lot were hit by takers, said Delagio. Worst strike yet. Something like that, said Deal.
They're taking their own damn time about getting the relief fleet here, said Markins.
That's because they cancelled it, said Deal.
What?
Barked Delagio, standing up with a jolt.
They're leaving us here to die?
Very deliberately.
I don't...
Delagio's eyes were wild. Markins sat forward in his chair, hands gripping its armrest tight.
I'm working on it, said Deal. There's a ship, inbound, that could get us all off-planet in one go. We need to let the other rigs know that single-point-evac protocols need effecting if this is going to work.
Can't do that from here, said Markins, shrugging. You need at least two senior staff from different rigs to...
He stopped when he saw Deal and Delagio both staring daggers at him.
Oh, yeah, he said. Right.
Think of all those administratum slates we'll have to wade through afterward, said Delagio, rolling her eyes.
Which would you prefer, said Deal, death by boredom or having your blood freeze solid in your veins?
Point, said Delagio. Before we get to all that, though...
She frowned, and the serpentine dragon tattoos that formed her eyebrows creased until their tongues were touching.
How did you escape your rig going down?
Well, said Deal, that's a long... She stopped, looking pale and stricken.
You all right, girl? Said Delagio.
Can't handle the shine, chuckled Markins. Told you these croids got no guts.
Delagio jumped back as Deal puked a great stream of molten light onto the floor, the substance hissing as it dribbled through the grate beneath her feet. She jerked upright and looked straight at Delagio. Her eyes and mouth were lit by a fierce light, her face a horrifying mask with three white holes aglow.
Bloody hellfire!
Shouted Delagio, leaping up onto her seat and scrabbling to get her pulse pistol out from the tangle of her blankets. She fumbled it, the bulky sidearm skittering into the glowing puddle of vomitous discharge that was seeping through the floor grate. Markins grabbed his iron rod, lifting it across himself to deliver a heavy backhand, and swung. Deal outstretched a hand, and Markins froze, unmoving, his flabby bulk unbalanced but somehow remaining held in mid-swing.
Wait, coughed Deal. I can explain. Can you?
Shrieked Delagio, scrabbling up the pulse pistol.
Ah!
The glowing white liquid burned her skin, and she juggled the pistol before pulling a sleeve over her hand and regaining her grip. She desperately tried to get a cloth-covered finger into the trigger guard, but her head hurt, a sudden-onset headache that made it impossible to concentrate.
Seven sockets of the Holy Throne! What on terror is wrong with you?
Deal took the pistol from her hand and set it down behind her, as if relieving it from a child. Despite herself, Delagio was too shaken up to resist.
I don't really know what's happening to me, said Deal, her hands trembling. But you need me alive, that I can tell you, or we're all lost. What do you mean? It's not just some error or accident that they aren't going to extract us this time. They want us dead.
Delagio paled.
Why? They know about the Tau, but you and I are going to make sure that every man, woman and child gets off this planet before we all freeze. How? And what about this?
She motioned at the still sizzling vomit on the octagonal chamber's floor.
I ate food supplies intended for a Tau metabolism. It's fine. I had to eat something. I knew this whole Xenos thing would turn out bad,
said Delagio. You heard about that alien mercenary war sphere in Saltire near space, the one full of cannibals?
It's getting nearer, apparently, said Markins. No one knows why.
Deal made a face.
No,
said Delagio, her eyes wide. Deal nodded slowly.
Oh, yes, that's our only ride out of here.
Chapter 10. Siege Blitz. Fortress 6th West. All Hallow. Scorpid Cluster.
Battle stations!
Zedro Farron opened his eyes, his hands automatically checking the critical points of his bolt rifle. His augmented sensors pierced the amber gloom of the Night Harrower's hold. His battle brothers sat ranged around him, silent and still. Some of them were looking around, taking stock, just as he was. The grinding growl of the repulsor's gravplate engines filled the tank's interior. Farron glanced at the data slate mounted on the control interface. The Harrower was making its way through a thick coniferous forest with a long winding path cutting the center. Farron leaned over and pressed the script rune at the base of the data slate, refreshing his knowledge of the mission parameters. They had made planetfall, the dropships landing in a vast clearing without incident. Now they were en route to a traditional-looking Imperial keep. It was a garrison point, formerly held by the vassals of their allies, the Angels of Absolution, but according to the brief, it was now in thrall to dangerous rebels. Lately, Farron had been longing for battle, and those who stood against the Adeptus Astartes upon their own home planets were in dire need of extermination. The sweet release of combat was close. A stray thought surfaced, scratching at the back of Farron's mind. On an Adeptus Astartes homeworld, couldn't the resident chapter take care of one single fortress in rebellion?
Primaris of the Third Company, came Chaplain Zeroff's voice over the vox. We are upon All Hallow at the request of our successor chapter, the Angels of Absolution, who call this forest world their home. We are to extinguish the fires of a rebellion. The planetary subclass is feudal, so we do not expect heavy resistance.
We peasants should fit right in, said Morricone.
Farron shot him a look.
One of the chapter's sentinel fortresses has turned from the light of the Emperor, said Zeroff over the Magnavox. Squads Farron, Orenst, and Pavel, stay the course on full ahead. You Primaris Marines will form the vanguard, attacking via the drawbridge and the gate. You are cleared to kill on sight anything that is not wearing battle plate. Make it count.
Aye, replied Farron. Understood. We will win glory for the chapter, for Terra and...
He paused, frowning, before completing the phrase by invoking the holy name of Mars. Something was not right.
Engagement range in 3 minutes, said Gazar over the interior vox. I can see the target edifice through the trees, Lieutenant. The site has extensively fortified outer walls and a high keep within. Relaying picked.
Farron shook his head, dispelling his doubts as he took stock of Gazar's visual. A large fortress with a prominent gatehouse and a raised drawbridge behind a moat. It had Icarus batteries on each tower's corner and a high-walled keep at its heart, each fascia adorned with a 60-foot carving of a faceless, hooded angel. He nodded as the battle ahead unfolded in his mind, planning his mode of attack in a matter of seconds.
Lieutenant, said Thron, I must ask, if this is a chapter planet, why are we attacking it? Can they not see to their own business?
And were we not intending to engage an orc presence after transit? Asked Kazar.
Don't ask, said Vesley. Just act.
Farron nodded in affirmation, but said nothing.
These Angels of Absolution are not the Lion's first sons, said Enrod dismissively. They need an education in the arts of war if they can't keep their own houses in order.
Does it matter why we're attacking? Said Lenkatz, Morricani's second.
If we are told to take out a rebel strongpoint, then we take it out and leave a smoking crater as a warning for the next idiots to entertain heretical thoughts. My gun's machine spirit has been dormant way too long.
I know how it feels, said Enrod.
Morricani smiled.
Nothing like revolting amounts of firepower applied to heretics who consider themselves safe.
Just get the job done, said Farron, and stay focused. I'm anticipating having to split our forces if we're to get all of them.
The Raven Wing will likely take care of any stragglers, said Vesley. I'm not so sure, said Farron. I can't recall ever actually seeing them in battle, and I'm beginning to think that's deliberate. Helm's on. I'm going for a wide-spectrum view. He opened the hatch at the top of the Raposa and sprung up, catching himself before lifting his upper body smoothly upwards. The grinding of the Raposa tripled in intensity as it accelerated to combat speed, its anti-grav engines shaking the hull with a perceptible vibration. The black-walled fortress came completely into view as the Harrower turned a long, curving corner on the forest path. With its battlements looming over the tree line ahead, Farron could see it was clearly designed after the classical fortress of Calibanite design, its walls canted and angled to deflect incoming shot with a minimum of structural damage. From whatever avenue of approach the attacker's shots came, his assault would be blunted, and any who braved the killing field that had been established around it would present himself to the quad autocannon arrays mounted on each of its 8 points. Each emplacement was mounted on a ball and socket gimbal, so it could be brought to bear on any foe that dared approach. The main gate itself looks almost impenetrably thick, a giant slab of metal and stone emblazoned with stylized battle scenes. On a chapter planet, such a gate would likely be proof against everything short of a multi-melter.
"Can you take down one of these trees so it falls away from us, Ghazar?" said Farron. "One of the really large ones."
"If I put the Icarus rockets to it as well, almost certainly," said Ghazar. "There are a few contenders. By my estimates, the garrison here have been lazy with their axes of late. Want me to knock?"
"If you would."
"Engagement range in 3, said Ghazar. 2, 1, target."
The hull of the Harrower was filled by the screaming roar of its Laz Talon discharging. Twin bolts of crimson energy slammed low into the tallest, widest tree at the clearing's edge. Ghazar fired again, the second dual bolt blasting into the base of the tree towering next to it. The trunks came apart in an explosion of thick flinders. The first tree moved, then the second, ever so slowly leaning towards the path. There was a whoosh from behind Farron's head, and 2 pairs of missiles shot out from the Repulsor's Icarus pod to veer upwards, striking each tree 30 feet from the tip of its trunk. The missiles detonated with an ear-splitting bang, their impact sending the giant coniferous trees back to topple straight towards the fort. Ghazar's calculations were impeccable, as ever. The first tree crashed down into the curtain wall with tremendous force, the tip of its hardwood trunk smashing down the battlements even as the other trunk crashed home. A great cloud of grey dust, needle leaves and spinning debris rose up, but the fortress wall remained whole. Farron ducked back into the Repulsor just as the point defence guns on the battlements swung around to face him. He heard the brack, brack, brack of heavy autocannons firing, each punching impact ringing loud on the Harrower's hull in a percussive storm of shells. Morricani laughed, something wild in his tone. Farron savoured the feeling of the cocktail of stimulant chemicals flowing through his blood in response to his spiking heart rate. He thought of old Pater Call in that moment, of the contempt the ancient Archmagos would have had at the very idea of an enemy hoping to stop a Repulsor tank with a volley of conventional shot. No matter how many of their guns they brought to bear, it would not be nearly enough to save them. The Harrower slewed across the clearing from the wide road to follow the forest's eaves. Its brother transports bulled forward together for the main gate. The dire tidings transport of Squad Pavel swept a killing volley along the battlements with its heavy onslaught cannon. Farron nodded in approval when he noticed that the tank's gunner, Ferrant, had fired in stuttering bursts, so its bolts found the gaps in the battlements and not the crenellations themselves. The volley was rewarded with screams of pain from the garrison troops. Not to be outdone, the onslaught cannon of Squad Orant's transport, Heaven's Troth, poured a stream of bullets into the quad gun array on the nearest tower. The heavy caliber shots knocked it off kilter, blew off 2 of its barrels, then tore it away completely in a scream of tortured metal. The Harrower, having ground a path of mud and rock across the verdant clearing, was close enough to make a push for the walls. Farron took hold of the pintle-mounted cannon's manual controls and sent a long, sustained volley at the trees Ghazar had felled, splintering away swathes of their outstretched boughs.
"Now or never," he voxed to Ghazar.
The Repulsor rose upon its grav impulses and mounted the 2 fallen trees near their bases. The trees groaned, splintering and cracking as the tank's anti-grav field pushed down with immense weight, but Ghazar's skill as a driver was such that the Harrower made the climb over the moat at an even pace. The tank ground its way straight up the mighty trunks, its grav field snapping lesser branches and hurling great clouds of pine needles into the air as it pushed inexorably upwards. As it got closer to the battlements, Ghazaar accelerated hard, the jutting stumps of the tree's broken boughs no impediment to the repulsor's aggressive grav field. Farron watched as the harrower's main armament cantered upwards, its las talon lining up with the quad gun array that was tearing at its flank with raking blasts of autocannon fire. A dual blast of ruby light, and the quad gun emplacement was reduced to a mangled claw of metal reaching up into the sky. Then the repulsor was up and over the wall. Farron's stomach lurched as the tank launched from the battlements. There was a moment of weightlessness, followed by a strange, cushioned thump. The lieutenant unslung his bolt rifle and dropped inside, readying a frag grenade with his finger over the release switch.
Now!
The transport's frontal ramp flew open with a clang of pistons. Sunlight poured in. In the courtyard before them was a ragtag assemblage of vassals, humans clad in defaced heraldry, many of whom were bringing lasguns to bear. Some of them were disfigured mutants, badly changed by whatever vile gods they worshipped in place of the Omnissiah. Spears of ruby light shot out from their guns, glancing from the harrower to little effect. Farron hurled his grenade at the thickest concentration of the rebels, the detonation sending a group of them sprawling in a cloud of blood and shrapnel.
"Traitors!" shouted Farron. "Your death has come for you!"
Enrod and Vesley were already firing, kneeling on either side of Farron. He took up his own bolt rifle and picked off one target, a three-eyed freak with too many chins. His second bolt took down the quadrupedal mutant to his right, and his third the elephantine brute behind him. Each round took a rebel in the centre mass before detonating to spray gore, bone and offal in a wide radius. Farron heard the searing hiss of plasma shots from either side of the harrower, along with Morricani's familiar barking laugh. The sergeant and his squad were taking a deadly tally of their own, burning spheres of superheated gas blazing out in tight volleys to vaporize the lasgun-armed mutants by the dozen. This was not glorious work, thought Farron, not a worthy foe, but it was necessary.
"Any moment they charge,"
said Farron, watching more of the mutant creatures spill from the spiral staircases, barracks and gatehouses around the edge of the courtyard. He could read the hatred in their eyes, the set of their shoulders, the snarls on their lips.
"Ghazaar, be ready!"
The rebels were gabbling, screaming and moaning in pain as they levelled a tattered volley of lasfire at Farron and his brothers. A four-horned mutant's las shot smacked him in the leg, but the auto-reactive plate over his kneecap took most of the impact. He returned fire, his bolt hitting the mutant in the nose. The shot caved in his face a split second before exploding messily, leaving a headless corpse toppling into the dirt. Farron looked left and right before scanning the top levels of the fortress. As he watched, a building-leveling explosion blasted away a massive chunk of the battlements from the top of the keep ahead. Through the clouds came a Thunderhawk gunship, low and steady, with its metal jaws agape.
"Here come the first," said Vesley, "high and mighty." "Focus on the enemy," said Farron. "The counterattack is close."
Nearby, the mutant creatures were massing into a throng, two of them carrying Hessian sacks filled with bulky cylinders. A great roar went up as the rebels rushed the repulsor. Farron put a bolt into the bulging, distended neck of the nearest one carrying a sack charge. He went down hard, his sack of dynamite spilling its contents across the yard. Vesley got the second mutant with a chest shot just as he hurled his explosives towards the Primaris Marines. A moment later, the rebel burst in a welter of red fluids.
"Fire in the sky,"
said Morricani, loosing a bolt of plasma at the satchel as it arced through the air.
"Brace!"
shouted Farron, turning his shoulder as his brothers followed suit. The satchels of dynamite detonated with a series of staccato booms. The blast wave flung mutant bodies backwards, painting the flagstones red as it bowled Farron and his brothers back into the harrower. There was a moment of stunned silence amongst the throng.
"Get back inside," said Farron. "We have seconds at most."
His brothers moved in with practiced efficiency, some through the front ramp, others the side door. Then, as if driven by a single overriding impulse, the remainder of the mutant mob charged, with their voices raised in a chorus of hellish screams.
"Ghazaar,"
said Farron,
"do it."
"Aye, Lieutenant."
The Harrower's engines whined as if offended, then gave a coughing boom. A massive pulse of anti-gravitic energy burst out from its perimeter of bulky repulsion plates. The charging mutants were flung away by an invisible wave of force, tumbling back into the dirt or slamming into the walls of the garrison buildings.
"Go!" said Farron.
He charged from the front of the Harrower with Enrod and Vesley close on his heels. Farron sent three bolts into three different targets, each of them within a dozen paces of the next. He was already searching out new hostiles, as a series of detonations ripped apart those he had already doomed. His squad claimed their own impressive tallies as they moved, killed, and moved again. Loud hissing roars came from close behind, as Morricani's Hellblasters took out the quad guns pivoting around to draw a bead on the Primaris warriors. There was a loud explosion from behind them as the Heaven's Troth and Dire Tidings finally took down the massive door to the keep. Shattered at the hinges by Laz Talon shots, the giant structure toppled in an avalanche of broken stone and dust. The Troth was first through. The repulsor's front jaws opened wide, and Orenst and his brothers charged out, adding their own bolt rifle shots to the one-sided firefight.
"Second level!" shouted Farron. "Squad Orenst, you're with me! There's a way into the keep up there. Morricani, take the right."
"It would be my pleasure,"
shouted back Morricani, far louder than necessary. Farron darted into the leftmost corridor within the thickest part of the curtain wall. He turned the first corner and took a lasgun shot right in his chest. It felt like a punch to the solar plexus, but he shrugged it off. He had taken worse on the dunes of Mars, and he was already running through it. A silhouetted figure stumbled backwards in the corridor ahead. Farron shot him in the chest. The mutant sprawled as a crater suddenly appeared where his lungs should be. He fell back into the shaft of light from an arrow slit beyond to reveal a hideous mask of pink flesh. Beyond the mutant's corpse was a wide set of stairs. Farron leapt the cadaver without breaking stride, Enrod close behind. The lieutenant was already halfway up the flight of stairs when he heard Vesley's voice.
"What in Cog's name is... Ah!"
Farron spun round, looking over Enrod's shoulder. The mutant, whose torso he had blasted open, had risen up, as if pulled by invisible strings. He was hanging in mid-air. A stream of white energy was pouring out of the mass of flesh where his face should have been, boring into Vesley's chest like a plasma torch. Shadows danced across the walls like fiends at some hellish bacchanal.
"Kill it!"
shouted Farron. He pushed Enrod down, bringing his bolt rifle around to take a shot. Too slow. Thrun had already launched himself at the hovering corpse, bringing it down hard in a pit fighter's slam hold. Sickly white light poured out everywhere as Thrun put his knee on the thing's neck, leaning all his considerable weight on it with a sickening crack. With one hand, he grabbed its head, forcing it at an unnatural angle to point to the wall in case it vomited more energy. With the other, he grabbed its collarbone, fingers sinking deep into its flesh. Then, with a great heave, Thrun pulled the corpse's body one way and pushed its head the other, decapitating it in a messy burst of blood and ectoplasm.
"You could have just shot it," said Enrod. "Enough, Enrod," said Farron. "Vesley, are you fit to go on? That looks bad."
The young warrior shook his head.
"I am compromised. I will take the rear."
He heaved, as if to vomit, and blood spilled from his helm's grill.
"It's gone right through me, I think. My furnace has been triggered. I must fight on. I cannot waste it." "Understood," said Farron. "I made it back from a Belisarian surge once. You can too."
Vesley nodded stiffly, struggling his helm off and mag-clamping it to his waist.
"I need air," he said. "Come on."
Farron took the lead once more, taking the stairs three at a time.
"Wait,"
said Vesley, screwing up his eyes.
"I don't think I'm going to..."
Suddenly, the young warrior convulsed, his back arching unnaturally far, and screamed like a man on the rack. He started to lash out, hands grasping like claws at his brothers nearby. To Farron's horror, his eyes started to glow white. Thrun struck him hard in the side of the head with the butt of his bolt rifle, and Vesley went down.
"Cocks above," said Farron. "That is Psychomark, without a doubt."
He opened a secondary vox channel.
"Orenst, follow us up when you're able to, and secure Vesley if you can. We must find whatever phenomenon it is that is causing this, and pull it out by the root."
He turned to his brothers.
We move. Now. On me.
Running onwards up the stairs with his brothers in tow, Farron made his way up towards a wide hardwood scaffold. He panned the barrel of his bolt rifle around as he reached the archway entrance, its bulk pulled tight against his shoulder. As he emerged, his eyes widened in disbelief. Before him was a scene from the Imperium's darkest nightmare. From the corner of his eye, Farron caught a glimpse of a Tau stealther emerging from the shadows. Before he could react, the Xenos' shot struck him in the head. Farron's world exploded.
Chapter 11. Grim Revelations. Fortress 6th West, Allhallow, Scorpid Cluster. Sergeant Morricani sprinted hard up the stairs, his plasma incinerator's recharge coils lighting the stone corridor's walls a strange undersea blue.
"Time to die in flames, heretics!" he called into the shadows.
There were sounds of battle in the distance, coming from the top of the keep by his reckoning. No doubt Zeroff and his veteran Dark Angels were up there already, having all the fun. The Hellblaster sergeant reached a long stretch of tunnel and ran down it, Lenkatz and the rest of his men hard on his heels.
"No signal on this level," said Daradan, his forearm auspicator pinging. "All this firepower, but no one to use it on."
"So we go onward," said Morricani, "and up." He ran up another flight of stairs, heavy footsteps pounding on the flagstones, and emerged on the top of the battlements. He checked down the line of his gun for signs of life, but saw nothing. The defenders of this section of the castle had been killed, and less than a minute ago by his reckoning.
"Energy weapons," he said,
looking down at a cadaver with a fist-sized hole in its chest.
"Plasma, by the look of it. Perhaps our Ravenwing or Deathwing brothers got here first." "Bit small for a plasma gunshot," said Daradan.
"I was thinking that too," said Morricani. "Pistol, maybe?"
Leaping the corpses of slain mutants, he ran over hardwood scaffold to reach the keep beyond.
"Do keep up," he called back to Lenkatz and the others.
They redoubled their pace, gathering around Morricani with their bulky incinerators, aimed to cover all possible entrances. Ahead of them was a large iron door, banded with sacred texts and info locks. It was Proteus pattern by Morricani's estimation, and therefore proof against even a hydraulic battering ram array.
"Right,"
said Morricani, holding his gun to his lips for a moment. He took a step back and aimed at the lock. There was a high whine as Morricani ran his gun's plasma coils to maximum. It was followed by a searing bang and a flash of painfully bright blue light. A wide hole appeared where the door's info lock had been a moment before. The choking fumes of vaporized metal filtering through the Primaris Marine's helms to sting at their nostrils. Morricani kicked hard just below the hole, and the door flew open with a loud clang. The sergeant was the first through, charging up a long spiral staircase that ringed the inside of the cylindrical keep. High in the interior was an enormous bell, so thick with dust and guano it had to have been silent for decades. The sounds of explosions and gunshots came from high above, and the giant bell rang dully on the cusp of hearing with the reverberations.
"Those are Stormbolter rounds," said Lenkatz. "Double detonation. My money's on the Deathwing." "Then let's get up there."
Morricani shouldered his plasma incinerator and ran up the stone stairs three at a time, taking care to stick close to the wall as he made his way up the inside of the tower. The sergeant heard the thunder and crack of battle much clearer as he got closer to the top of the tower, so clear he could make out the weapons being discharged. He could feel a glorious thrill of anticipation coursing through his veins. Underneath his jests, he had often wondered what it would be like to fight alongside the finest warriors in the First Legion, to actively wage war shoulder to shoulder with the heroes of the Dark Angels. The thought made his blood pump far more than he would ever publicly admit. Morricani reached the top of the stairs. A stout hardwood trapdoor barred their path. He put his shoulder to it and pushed hard, but the whole structure was reinforced with 3-inch straps of iron. With only the smallest fraction of give, it felt as if it had been slab-bolted from the other side.
"A little room, please," said Morricani. "I'm about to offend Phobosian's machine spirit for a second time in as many minutes. If I have to have my name etched on the pillars of the Hall of Fire as a result, I would rather yours were not below it."
Morricani retreated a couple of steps, kneeling and raising his gun to an almost vertical angle before taking his shot. The trapdoor's right-hand side disintegrated in a shower of molten metal and burning flinders. He stood tall and put his shoulder to it once more, this time pushing it ajar as he brought his gun up with him and fought his way up and out as best he could. The sergeant had been trained for years to take in a battle situation, assess the best route to victory, and act decisively in the same moment. Yet the sight that greeted him on top of the vast bell tower was so unexpected, it left Morricone all but dumbstruck. The bone-coloured armour of the Deathwing stood stark against soot-black battlements. Nearby were the forbidding figures of Company Master Gabriel, Epistolary Dothrail, and Chaplain Zeroff, standing with legs braced as they took killing shots with their plasma pistols at anything that came within range. Together with the veterans of the First, they were hammering fire into not one, but two breeds of enemy. Stomping, screaming, running in every direction, were misshapen mutants still clad in scraps of the fortress garrison's livery. Some of them were twice the height of a man, nests of tentacles thrashing from their necks and armpits as strange crustacean claws snapped and bulging eyeballs burst with the sheer intensity of the mutative energies racking their bodies. They fought with no finesse or direction, bellowing like wounded bulls as they stormed through plasma shot and bolter salvo to fall upon those dark angels they could reach. The other breed of foe atop the parapet was sleek, sophisticated and highly advanced, almost clinical in its attack. Morricone recognized the towering shapes of Tau battlesuits, not the near-invisible stealthers they had faced upon Saltire Vex, but gun-limbed giants twice the size of a space marine. They laid down pulsing bursts of fire into Deathwing Terminators and fleshy mutants alike. The ancient bone-coloured tactical dreadnought armour of the First's veterans was living up to its reputation. Morricone could only see two of the Deathwing that had gone down, and even they were firing their storm bolters from their slumped positions. The same could not be said for the mutant creatures. Every volley of pulse rifle fire that struck one of them seared it to the bone, leaving deep red wounds in its flesh. The scent of sizzling, tainted meat hung in the air so strong that Morricone felt his diaphragm twitch and his gorge rise with the need to gag. He had heard tell of the stench of chaos, but to feel it in the back of his throat was another matter. He fought his horror back down, taking a deep breath through his mouth to re-establish his battle focus. A three-legged, slavering hulk with a lower jaw of a crocodile scrambled past, intent on the Deathwing behind. Morricone took a shot at its flank, blasting it away. It landed 10 feet away amongst a steam of its own atomized flesh.
Another mutant was quick to replace it, a slender thing scrambling forth on all fours with its back arched high.
It gave a thin, keening scream as a trio of Deathwing bolt rounds thudded into it and detonated in a spray of blood and bone. Each left a massive hole right through the creature, but somehow it kept on. The thing's shrieks seemed to come from everywhere at once, from beyond the battlements as well as atop them. Several more of the mutants joined in the din, voices raised in madness and despair. The sound cut right through Morricone, as if thin needles of sound were piercing his soul. He shot a winged freak with too many fingers as it reared to pounce, blasting it over the battlements. The ravaged quadruped nearby shook as if in the grip of a palsy, howling. White fire burst from inside it, pouring out from its eyes, its mouth, and the entry and exit wounds in its flank. Morricone ducked as one of the white beams seared overhead to strike a hovering Tau warsuit in the chest. He glanced back. The beam had cored it from front to back. Incredibly, the Xenos machine fought on for a few seconds, discharging more pulse shots into the spasming mutant before boosting backwards to slam into a battlement wall. The warsuit fell amongst toppling crenellations before becoming still. Where the Xenos gunner's beams had put holes in the creature, more white fire gushed out. Some of it struck other mutants, and they too shuddered, the strange effluvium shooting from their mouths and eyes to cascade across the ranks of the Deathwing. Morricone took one down, Zeroff another, but the chain reaction was already out of control. One of the veteran Dark Angels was hit in the thigh, and Morricani's breath caught as he saw the beam burning through to the flesh beneath, felling the bone-armoured giant. He had seen tactical dreadnought armour turn aside even a las cannon blast, but the psychic ectoplasm had melted it as if it were wax. What manner of phenomenon was this?
"Sergeant!" came the voice of Nenst Lenkatz from below. "Permission to join the fray!" "Get out here!" said Morricone, sending a blast of plasma into the nearest mutant before clambering out onto the parapet's flagstones.
Lenkatsa's head and shoulders emerged from the trapdoor, his heavy incinerator carried up and over as he came.
"But stay low," said Murakami. "This is a far cry from the battles we fought on Mars."
"I can see that,"
said Lenkats, looking in awe at the surreal struggle unfolding around him. He raised his gun, overcharged it with a piercing whine, and took a shot at the nearest Tau battlesuit. It hit the Xenos machine under the arm, ripping the limb free in a spray of molten alloys and gobbets of alien plastic to expose the pilot inside. The Xenos warsuit crouched for a moment before boosting away into the air. Another giant machine thumped down from the skies to cover his retreat, streams of energy pulsing from its quad-barreled cannons. To the north, a squad of Deathwings stood over their fallen comrade, their stormbolters ripping apart the mutants that flailed towards them. Another clutch of the vile things were throwing themselves towards a trio of Tau warsuits to Morikani's left. Those that survived the Xenos team's punishing firepower charged physically into the alien suits. One of the giant machines kicked its assailant square in the chest with its hoof-like foot, sending him tumbling away to crouch low and vomit blood onto the flagstones. At the same time, another warsuit battered a mutant aside with a long-barreled weapon system attached to its forearm. The mutant creature, its gangling limbs grasping, bounded back up again to grab for the Tau warrior's box-like head. It hung from the warsuit's neck like a jungle felid, trying to bring down an ogryn. Morikani took a shot, the sphere of superheated gas blasting the mutant apart and slamming into the torso of the battlesuit behind with force enough to send it toppling over the battlements in a crackle of energies.
"Good shot," said Lenkats. "Thank you, Nenst."
Morikani stood up to his full height, deftly tripping up a rushing mutant, only to stamp its distended head into the stone floor of the parapet a moment later.
"Now this is what you might call a target-rich environment."
There was a muted bellow as a mutant with a pair of limbs jutting from its distended maw strode confidently towards Morikani, its halberd thrusting towards him. Morikani backhanded the flat of its blade, swatting aside the blow as his incinerator recharged. The mutant was quick, though, and spun the halberd in a full circle before thrusting once more. Morikani dived aside to avoid the risk of being spitted. Dropping his still-charging plasma gun, he drew his bolt pistol from his hip and put a round between the creature's mouth arms before holstering it again in one smooth motion. The mutant fell back as its head burst wide open. Then the screams that Morikani had registered on the cusp of hearing suddenly grew loud. They were so piercing, they hurt the soul, but he still managed to scrabble up his plasma incinerator and whisper appeasement to its machine spirit. A swarm of strange, fish-like creatures, much like the giant Remora Sapres Morikani had spotted in Saltai Vex's oceans, burst up from behind the battlements and soared into the air. They shimmered in the light, their bodies glistening as if covered in multi-hued oil. They were at once dark blue and all the colours of the spectrum. Demons. Not the red-skinned fiends Morikani dimly recalled fighting at Terra, thank the Omnisire, for those creatures of blood and hatred had come on by the thousand. Even with a single glance, he could tell they were not of the natural world. They seemed somehow superimposed over the reality of their surroundings, and the patterns of their flight emanated a raw otherness that made the sergeant's skin crawl. One of the creatures suddenly burst apart into gobbets of what looked like quicksilver. A lash of emerald lightning crackled over Morikani's head, the work of epistolary Dothrail. The rest of the creatures suddenly turned in midair, their previous upwards momentum into a steep downwards dive, then a swoop. Where the creatures plunged into the melee, their wings slashed limbs from torsos and heads from necks. With each pass, they cut down mutants, Tau warsuits, and space marines alike. Morikani tracked one of the things as it rose back up, leading his shot a little before letting fly. The beast veered at the last minute, as if it had known the attack was coming, turning its upward flight into a spiral and avoiding a salvo of bolt shells from the Deathwing below. The Sky Shark creatures winging behind it gave a triumphant shriek as they peeled away, swiftly coming back around to whip their mace-like tails at the heads of those Deathwing desperately trying to shoot them out of the sky. One of the Space Marines was bowled over, his helm crushed so badly the head inside must have been caved in. A pair of mutants fell on him to rip and tear at his neck. More of the fiendish creatures slashed through the skies, screaming as they spun in strange helical patterns that dipped down to mutilate and slice those below. Morikani's plasma incinerator indicated it was at readiness, and he took another shot, this time singeing the tip of the leading demon's wing. It corrected its flight and flew on with strange grace. A salvo of Tau energy pellets hurtled up to meet the creatures, the bright little beads appearing in such profusion the leading demons could not avoid them. They pierced the first two creatures through in a dozen places, their shimmering non-flesh quivering like jellyfish hit by a shotgun blast. A moment later, they discorporated in clouds of droplets. The ichor spattered down as acid rain to hiss and smoulder on the parapet, and the rest of the demons dispersed through the morass, their piercing shrieks tearing at the mind.
"Audio dampeners to fall,"
said Morikani, drowning out the sound of that infernal screaming as best he could. He sent his next shot at the intersection where two demons were likely to cross flight paths. He had read their movements well. One of the beasts took a direct plasma blast. It burst into a cloud of what looked like tiny silver fish, spasming as they scattered in all directions.
"Farron," said Morikani, "if you can hear me, you're missing out on some weapons-grade strangeness up here."
The sergeant dimly heard a shout of rage. He half-turned at the last moment to see a monstrous mutant with a bull's head and tentacle-fingered hands slam into him, lifting him off his feet with the impetus of its horned headbutt. Thinking quickly, he thumped it between the eyes with the butt of his recharging incinerator, then reached around for his bolt pistol. The creature's presumption in thinking it could gore him, especially when clad in the call-marked miracle that was Mark 10 armor, was sorely misplaced. With a cold shiver of apprehension, Morikani realized it did not intend to gore him after all. The bull mutant had its tentacle talons wrapped around him tight and was about to bowl him over the edge of the precipice-like battlements and down to the rocks 200 feet below. There was a rush of hot air from above. One of the Tau warsuits dropped down to stamp on the horned creature's shoulders and neck. The creature crumpled into the flagstones, knocked cold. Morikani fell backwards, catching a crenellation in the small of his back as he rebounded from the castle wall. He rolled away from the shimmering jet turbines of the Xenos warsuit suddenly in front of him as the Tau warrior poured a stream of glowing energy beads into the fallen mutant. Flat on his back, Morikani saw one of the sky sharks diving down fast, its wings extended to slash at the Tau warsuit from above. He pulled his incinerator in close and fired vertically upwards, the plasma bolt vaporizing the thing in a cloud of multicolored mist.
"I owe you nothing," he told the warsuit's back.
It moved away without a word, driving back a pair of mutants with a focused inferno from its cylindrical flamer weapon. At some unheard command, those Tau warsuits still aloft turned their guns on the demons swooping overhead. Flickering streams of plasma fire and energy beads shot diagonally upwards to intercept the flying, swooping sky sharks. As Morikani got to his feet, he saw the earthbound Tau were focusing their fire on the mutants, sending columns of flame and heat-seeking missiles to incinerate and blast apart those fleshy creatures that still fought back. Together with the Dark Angels and Primaris Marines, they were regaining control of the fight. To the west, Company Master Gabriel vaulted up onto a rampart, and from there onto the control revetment of an emplaced Icarus quad gun atop the parapet. He swung it round with practiced ease, hammering autocannon fire up at the swooping demons in long streams of solid shot that glowed in the darkening sky. Three came apart in the space of as many seconds. The Deathwing added their own firepower, and the skies were soon clear. As one, the Tau began to pull back, firing their jetpacks to jump over the battlements and drift away. Many were still pouring firepower into the demons and mutants alike as they neared the canopy of the trees. Morikani and Lenkatz shared a glance, then both took aim at the nearest Tau warsuit. Their double volley caught the Xenos warrior full in the chest, dropping him like a stone.
"Primaris contingent," came the voice of Chaplain Zeroff. "Leave the Tau to flee. They are no longer a priority." "They are Xenos, Sergeant," came Lenkatz's voice over the Primaris Brethren's close comms line. "They must be annihilated. This rebellion is their work."
"Obey your orders," said Morikani, turning to Daradan as he pushed up from the trapdoor to join the fight. "Confine your fire to the rebels."
With the Tau moving out of the fight, Morikani and the Deathwing brought their firepower to bear on the remaining mutants and demons with terrible effectiveness. Now the Space Marines had the room to pick their targets at will. Stormbolter shots shredded hideous grotesques and sailing sky sharks left and right with methodical, contemptuous efficiency. Morikani moved to fight alongside the closest Deathwing Terminator, kicking a half-dead mutant in the throat as he shot another in the back. Nearby, the librarian, Dothrail, made short work of those demons that came too close with his crackling force sword, each carving blow cutting a swooping sky shark apart. Those that kept out of reach he blasted apart with crackling arcs of bioelectricity that erupted from his eyes to whip left and right.
Dothrail!
Shouted Morikani as a knot of mutants, previously playing dead amongst the corpses, surged up to lunge for the librarian's back. Suddenly, Company Master Gabriel was at his fellow officer's shoulder. He cut down the mutants as if he was born to it, impaling and bisecting and lunging again and again with the ease of a chapter champion in a practice cage. Each blow sent welters of blood sizzling to thicken the scent of cooked meat that hung in the air. Chaplain Zeroff waded through the corpses to join him, simply bludgeoning those mutants that came within arm's reach. Each swing of his Crozius Arcanum snapped a spine or caved in a skull in a flare of actinic blue light. In a matter of moments, the fight was over.
Morikani! Came a familiar voice from the sergeant's left.
It was Daradan, at the trapdoor with Lenkatz.
What's happening?
Go back down below,
said Morikani, motioning to Daradan as he made to approach.
You too, Lenkatz. Something is going on here. I'll debrief you once I've gained a clearer picture.
If you're sure, said Lenkatz.
I am extremely sure, said Morikani, seriously. Given present company, Primaris troopers will not be welcome. Neither will our officers come to that. But someone has to fill in for Farron.
Acknowledged,
said Lenkatz, following Daradan as he climbed back through the trapdoor and onto the spiral staircase beneath it. Morikani heard Daradan's voice as they went below.
No jokes. It must be bad.
Farron felt like his head was going to split in two. His helm was cratered so badly he could feel the wound pulsing in his scalp. He had rolled as fast and as far away from the source of the shot as he could, bolt rifle pulled in tight, and shook his head to clear it, but it had almost made him pass out instead. Already, he could feel his system pumping invigorating chemicals into his body to compensate. His Belisarian furnace had not triggered, thankfully, but he still felt like the inside of his cranium was on fire. He pushed to his feet, unsteady for a moment, before steeling himself. Muscle memory took over as he slid into a loose gunner's crouch. He submerged the splitting pain in the calm waters of the back of his mind, years of battle trance meditations pulling his focus together despite the ringing disorientation of the ambushing Tau's headshot. Around him, his squad had formed a tight perimeter, fighting against some unknown enemy. Their tight volleys were sent in staccato profusion, and the pain in Farron's skull flared a little with every bolt loosed from their rifles. Without his helm, the syncopated, percussive din of war would have been almost deafening. But the pain was ebbing, and his focus was coming back. Around him was a scene of utter carnage. The wide hardwood platform they had burst out onto reverberated beneath him, shaking under the armored feet of a strike force of Angels of Redemption. Dozens of their fellow Space Marines fought back to back, side to side, bolters hammering at the ghost-like forms that Farron dimly recognized as Tau stealthers. He raised his bolt rifle and took a shot of his own at a chameleonic blur, missing his target by a hand's breadth.
Cog damn it, said Farron under his breath. Waste of a bolt.
Ducking, he forced his frustration down and took stock once more. The platform was slick with blood, the gory remains of the keep's garrison spread liberally from one side of the scaffold to the other. Here and there, the power-armored forms of slain Angels of Redemption were strewn amongst the carnage, laid low by sustained plasma volleys or cored through by the same intense psychic discharge that had claimed Vesley. Some of them had eyes that were glowing white, a ghostly corpuscent playing around their sockets. Farron shook his head and stood once more, hands automatically checking his bolt rifle. His helm recalibrated, presenting firing solutions on the nearest enemies. Still plenty of Xenos left for him to kill. A slowly rising lust for revenge swelled in his chest, demanding to be quenched in blood. He took a bead. Then, in the space of less than a second, the Tau stealthers under his crosshairs disappeared from his helm display. Farron cast around, seeing strange ripples in the air for a moment. Then the Xenos were gone completely.
What in the Omnissiah's name?
Said Enrod, the barrel of his gun panning left and right. Thrun, too, had stopped.
Where did they go?
He said, looking around in puzzlement. Pavel was still firing.
They're right there, Lackwit,
he shouted. A pulse shot came from the shadows and hit him in the midriff. He cried out as the impact sent him clattering back into Farron. Pavel's bald head bounced off Farron's pauldron, hard enough to elicit a stagger, but Farron caught him and pushed him back into the fight. The Tau shot had been stopped by the layered ceramite of his Mark X armor, and he would shake off his disorientation fast. Farron loosed a double shot, straight past Pavel, in the direction he had last seen the stealthers.
They're right there!
Screamed Pavel, shooting his bolt rifle into the corner of the keep.
Why aren't you firing?
Xenotech has attacked our machine spirits, shouted Farron.
A volley of pulse rifle fire came in from a nearby battlement, lancing in to strike Thrun hard in the shoulder and burn his chapter iconography down to the bare ceramite. He went down to one knee before getting back to his feet.
Get in cover, said Farron. We need to rethink this.
His squad ducked back into the lee of a stone buttress, shoulder to shoulder, as they reloaded and checked their rifles. Enrod primed a pair of frag grenades, hurling them out to cover their retreat. Thrun slung his weapon and made to take off his helm.
No,
said Farron, putting his hand on the younger warrior's arm as the grenades went off with a double explosion.
I won't risk you taking a headshot.
He unclamped his own helmet with a hiss and mag-clamped it to his belt.
Let Pavel and I tackle this.
That's ironic, said Pavel, considering your orders during the Glitch War and the Noctis Labyrinthus.
It was during our training wars, Pavel, said Farron. Against most Xenos forces, you expose yourself to needless danger. But back on Mars, you insisted all of us wear our helms, and in doing so, you took us effectively out of the fight. Five of our brothers died. This is not the time to bring up old ghosts, said Farron, tersely. In my experience, nothing short of a headshot will convince you to value a piece of equipment designed to keep your brains inside your thick skulls. At least cover me, and cover your profile with a pauldron where you can.
Aye, said Pavel. That's what I've been doing for the last 16 months.
A burst of plasma shot in, smacking off Farron's gorget and scalding his jawline.
Ah!
He said, turning his shoulder and leaning out to return fire. He could see something shimmering out there now, standing in the lee of a stone tower. He put a bolt right in its center and leaned back again, narrowing his eyes in satisfaction as he heard the muffled boom and patter of an armor-piercing round doing its job in spectacularly gory fashion. A dull murmur behind Farron grew to a shouting crescendo. The lieutenant spun on his heel, grabbing a frag grenade from his belt and priming it in one smooth motion. Sprinting towards them up the stairs from the courtyard was a motley throng of twisted, hideous mutants, still clad in the ragged scraps of the garrison's chainmail. Many were armed with a sword and shield in the ancient feudal fashion. Farron made out snatches of slurred war cries amongst the gibberish shouted by the rest.
Destroy the traitors! Rush them! Cast them back into the darkness!
Farron's lips pulled back into a snarl as he lobbed the frag grenade. It bounced with a pair of solid thumps, its passage timed to perfection so that it reached the clutch of mutants just as it was about to detonate. The foremost mutant, a bulging sack of meat and ragged chainmail, threw himself atop the grenade with a plaintive cry that was far too high-pitched for such a massively built frame. He flew apart a moment later as the fragmentation device detonated with a wet thump, its killing force choked by the rebel's sacrifice. The creature's fellow mutants, coated with their comrades' remains, scrambled onwards. As they passed through the shadow of a circular tower, Farron noticed there was something different about them, a light that set their eyes and mouths aglow in the gloom. Three white witchfires glimmered in each fleshy head. Whatever was causing the garrison's mutation and orchestrating the rebellion was likely down there, in the dark of the keep's dungeons. Farron raised his bolt rifle once more and set it to full yield, planning to shoot his way through the wall of transmuted freaks to the truths that lay beyond. He had a lingering feeling of uncertainty in his gut. He was beginning to think it was not flesh and blood they fought this day, but something far deadlier. Morikani closed the trapdoor behind his men and turned back to the Dark Angels atop the parapet. Chaplain Zeroff, Dothrael and Gabriel were standing in the middle of the circular tower, talking amongst themselves. Four hulking Deathwing Terminators stood in a rough semicircle behind their officers. Two of their fellows were on one knee, having sustained serious wounds during the fight, but the barrels of their guns did not waver as they panned slowly across the canopy beyond the battlements. Morikani made out their words as he moved closer.
"What word from the Ravenwing interrogator, Chaplain?" said the Deathwing Sergeant, a giant with a thunderhammer and two stylized wing pennants curving from his shoulders.
"The quarry is contained," said Zeroff tersely. "We still have the best vantage point up here. For now, we remain alert."
The Deathwing Sergeant saluted. He and his squad were surrounded by the strewn remains of dozens of mutant corpses, the scene reminiscent of some demented abattoir. The air smelled strongly of burning flesh, scorched bone,